Welcome back to the Wit and Wisdom Show. I'm your host, Fred Witt. If you enjoy listening to my program, please consider subscribing or leave a rating below. I appreciate your support. So this is Wit and Wisdom, and I'm pleased to have my first guest of the Wit and Wisdom podcast, and it's Mike LeBove. Mike, welcome to the show.
Fred, I'm honored to be your first guest.
So Mike was just named a top 100 golf instructor by Golf Magazine, and he's had an extraordinary career filled with success and travel and exciting things that have happened in his life. And Mike, I thought it'd be fun for you and I to just chat about your life and your life as a golf instructor, and then start with, you're a top 100 instructor, which is an incredible honor, but yet, how did you start? Did you start with that idea in mind? So how did Mike LeBove get started in golf?
Wow. It's a fairy tale. It really is. And, you know, I grew up caddying for my dad and two uncles when I was about 10 years old, 11 years old. And they were all about 10, 11 handicap golfers, nice golfers. Mm-hmm. And I was playing all the other sports, basketball, football, baseball. And once I saw this game of golf, I got interested. And by the time I was 15, that's all I wanted to do. I wanted to play golf.
So by 15, you had just figured this
dropped week, everything else.
Dropped everything else.
Yeah.
Because that's unusual.
Yeah. And so I accelerated the learning process, if you will, just trying to get better. I had no lessons to speak of, a couple of simple lessons here and there, but mainly just as a competitor, just learned how to play, which a lot of people need to learn how to play. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure we'll talk about that a little bit as we get into lessons. But by the time I was a senior, I was playing some really nice golf. And I was a late recruit, and I wanted to go to LSU right there in my hometown, Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And I had an offer to go to Tennessee, to go check out Tennessee, and I didn't even want to go. I want to stay right here. And I want to go to Baton Rouge, LSU. I did, but it was funny. I had no idea at the time. I thought I was a pretty good player, and I was, but I had the worst swing on the team. But nobody wanted to play me from 100 yards and in. Mm-hmm. So when it comes time to put your score on the scorecard, your score looks the same as somebody that hits it really well. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, get
now,
out of school.
Now, Lindy, your daughter, says to this day that dad gets up and yanks it into the trees. And then after the first hole is done, par.
Yeah.
And mom and I are hitting it right straight down the middle and then par. Wait a minute. We haven't seen dad the whole hole.
Yeah.
And then we get the same score. Is that?
They play boring golf. It's boring. Mine's more exciting. I get to see more of the landscape, pretty things in the trees, stuff like that. No, but so I get out of college, and like a lot of young players, young golfers, they want to go test their skills professionally. Could I possibly make it as a tour player? And I think deep down inside, I knew I didn't have a chance, but I wanted to give it a chance. Mm-hmm. So I had an uncle that backed me, and I came out to Arizona to play four events, and the first event was in Yuma, Arizona, and for 54 holes, I shot two under par.
Wow.
And made last place check. I think it was $37, and I thought to myself, holy cow, these guys are good. Anyway.
But you hit payday,
yeah,
in your first tournament.
I backed up to the pay window, as they say. And anyway, it didn't go so well, right? I go back home, and I was going to go to Florida. I ended up hurting my back because my swing was so bad.
Oh.
Now, if you have a bad golf swing and it puts a lot of stress on the body, there's certain parts like the back, the elbow, and the shoulder that will at some point say, time out, you have to quit abusing me. That's what happened to me. My back went out. I had to get a job. So I got a job in Baton Rouge at a golf club. But 2 months later, a friend of mine calls me from Hilton Head and says, it's a guy that I was going to play in Florida with. And he had dropped out and took a job at Hilton Head, South Carolina. He calls up and goes, Mike, we have a position open in Hilton Head. You should come join me. It's a great spot. And I go ask my mom. I said, Mom, Chip just called and said there's an opening in Hilton Head, South Carolina, and I should come join him. What should I do? And my mom says, pack your bags and go.
Your mom?
My mom.
Your mom.
Pack your bags
said,
and go.
Wow.
To South Carolina. And I looked at her. I said, really? She goes, yeah, go. You can always come back home. Go give it a try. So when I look at where I am today, that was a defining moment. And we all have a couple of defining moments in our career as we look back of what if I'd have made this decision or that decision? Where would it have taken me? And that decision just opened up a whole new world. I was an accounting major at LSU. I thought I was going into accounting.
Yeah, you said your dad was an accountant.
He's a CPA. He passed away quite some time ago, sadly.
Sorry.
And I have two uncles that were CPAs.
Uh-huh.
So I would work for them in the summertime to pay for my golf. And when it came time to go to college, everybody said, what are you going to take? I don't know. I guess accounting. But by the time I was a junior, I knew I was doing something in golf. And so we go to Hilton Head. And within 3 months, I meet this young lady named Sandy Lumpkin.
Wow.
And she was playing golf for the University of Georgia at the time. Pretty as can be. And we're out playing golf every day, having a blast. And then I find out her dad is Jack Lumpkin.
The famous.
One of the top instructors in the world.
Yes.
National PGA Teacher of the Year, eventually. Still teaches Brian Harman on tour. Davis Love III.
Now, Brian Harman is left-handed.
Lefty, that's correct.
Is Jack Lumpkin left-handed?
No. It doesn't matter. If you're teaching a righty or a lefty, you can switch it around. More on that later. So I meet Jack Lumpkin, and I'm thinking to myself, holy cow, I've hit the jackpot.
Royalty.
Right? So here I've got this beautiful woman that I'm dating, and Jack, I meet Jack, and he says, during our first visit, he says, you teach some golf, don't you? I said, yeah, a little bit. And he says, I'm going out to teach tomorrow morning. Would you like to come out and watch me teach? Yes, sir, I would.
Wow.
So I go out there and I watch Jack give three lessons, I think it was. And I'm thinking to myself, I don't teach anything like this. Mm. And that really opened my eyes as to what I might enjoy doing in the future. And as soon as he said, why don't you come see me again? When and where? I'll be there. And to this day, that's still the best way for young instructors to learn how to teach. If you want to learn how to teach, you don't go you don't go sit in a classroom and listen to somebody talk about teaching.
Mm-hmm.
Even watching somebody teach is good, but if you could actually teach with that person,
mm-hmm.
where you're having to get your hands dirty a little bit, and help somebody and have a really good teacher coming behind you and maybe going, do you ever think about doing it this way or that way? Because mm-hmm. it is an art. to teaching anything, to teaching anything, is an art.
Well, and as you've seen in your career, it's something that grows. I mean, I've been amazed at you, Mike. You're not static. Almost nothing you've done is the same as it was 20 years ago. I took a lesson from you 20 years ago.
That's
I think we were 29 then. So wow. That makes us 49 now.
Yeah.
But 20 years ago, time flies. And you're different than you are today. You're a different instructor. You're a different person. You have different views. Can you just explain your personal growth?
I like learning anything. I just like learning. So whether it's how to play golf better, how to snow ski better, tennis. I was a competitive water skier at one time. It's just anything. I want to be better.
You've taken fly fishing lessons.
Sure. I might take a guide with me. I like learning about it. And there's a lot of different things I've taken lessons in. And I enjoy getting better at anything. So, and teaching is one of those things that I'm blown away today by how much more there is to learn in teaching golf and helping somebody learn. Not so much teaching golf, but helping the student learn. That's what fascinates me more today than anything. Hmm. It's not looking at a student and determining, here's what's keeping this player from being better. The most fascinating thing is once I tell them or share with them what that is, how can I get them to learn it? How do I know when they leave here, they're going to learn it? Can I give them some learning tools or some homework or some things to do so that when they come back, I can see, wow, you're getting it. Mm-hmm. That's great. You can spit out information right and left about the golf swing. We see it every day. Mm-hmm. It's on TV 24/7.
Yes.
Magazines, anybody that plays golf, that's all they're talking about.
And swing aids.
Yeah. Information from all angles, right? But really, you know, when it comes to golf, every golfer has like one thing that if they changed that one thing or improved that one thing, they would be better, a better ball striker. Now, you don't have to change one thing, your grip, your alignment, your stance, your posture, your takeaway, your swing plane, your weight shift, nothing to be a better golfer. You wouldn't have to change a thing to be a better golfer.
So what do you have to do?
You would have to manage your game better. And most people don't know how to play the game to the best of their ability, how to manage themselves around the golf course. Emotionally, and from a strategy standpoint of where do I hit this ball. Just yesterday, I was out for two playing lessons, and without saying anything about their swing, I was basically a good caddy. Mm-hmm. I've got a heck of a caddy record, by the way. I was coaching Grace Park at the time she won the U.S. Amateur, Women's Amateur.
Wow.
And that's a fascinating story, too, because I started teaching her about a year before, and she and her dad were looking for some event where I could come to and watch her play, see what we could learn. Mm-hmm. And my schedule had opened up where the U.S. Women's Amateur was available for me to go to. And so I told Sandy, I said, I'm going to go watch her play. And the more I thought about it, they played 36 holes a day, two matches a day. And I told Sandy, you know what? I'm going to be bored to death just walking 36 holes. I'd rather be in the game. Mm-hmm. So I called Grace on the phone and said, hey, do you have a caddy? She goes, no. I said, would you like one? Yes. I said, okay, I'll caddy for you under one condition. don't ask me anything about your swing. There will be no technique. We're going to play golf. Mm-hmm. And she goes, really? I said, yes. If you can't agree to that, I'm not coming.
Wow.
So she says, okay. And long story short, she wins a tournament. And it was so fun. And even one match, at the start of one match, like the third day, she goes and warms up on the range, and she starts hitting it both sideways. Mm-hmm. And she turns to me and she goes, I'm losing my swing. And I'm just cleaning some clubs or something. I said, no, you're not. We're just warming up. Just keep hitting. So she hits about three more balls. I'm serious. I'm losing my swing. I said, no, you're not. Your swing looks fine. You'll be fine. Mm-hmm. Sure enough, we go to the first tee, and she hits it 290 right down the middle.
Wow.
And I looked at her. I said, you're fine. She goes, yes. Let's go. And then I ended up caddying for her in two U.S. Opens, two top 10 finishes.
Really?
Yeah. No technique. Let's play golf.
Uh-huh.
So the average golfer today can use so much of that, of just a good caddy.
Uh-huh.
Go get an instructor and help you around the golf course. Don't go get an instructor to change everything you do about your game.
Mm-hmm.
Change your grip, your stance, your alignment, your takeaway, your top of your swing, your hand position, your impact position, your finish position. This is why most people get worse. Oh. You don't have to change all that stuff. You could get better immediately. Now, if you choose, if a 12 handicapper chooses to get a lot better, if they feel like they've reached their plateau, and I've been stuck here for a number of years, and they want to get better, yes, there might be some things you could change or improve upon to make your ball striking better, farther, more consistent. And when I say more consistent, there's nothing consistent about golf.
Mm-hmm.
You just like to be less inconsistent.
And so it's managing the downside.
Yeah, exactly.
Optimizing.
Exactly.
A perfect shot every time.
Exactly. And we have to coach this all the time. Most people's expectations are out of line.
Uh-huh.
In the fact that they want to hit so many good shots. I want to hit good shots too. But that's not what's going to determine how I play golf. Managing my bad shots or hitting less shots that are out of play. Just put it in play.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they say the same thing in tennis. If you're going to be a good tennis player, if you want to be really good, you have to be able to hit winners. You have to be able to serve a winner.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be able to hit a shot down the line as a winner to be a really good tennis player. If you want to be the best tennis player at your club, just among a bunch of, you know, typical tennis players, all you have to do is get it over the net. Just keep putting it over the net.
Isn't that amazing?
And the other player will beat themselves.
Yeah, 9 times out of 10.
They'll beat themselves. Just put it over the net.
That's incredible.
It's true. Now, and golf's the same way. Mm-hmm. Put it in play.
Uh-huh.
If you can hit the ball, if you can drive the ball on the property, let me start again. This is important. Every once in a while I say something profound, but I usually let them know when it's coming.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to play good golf, all you have to do is hit the ball, hit your driver on the property. Control the distance of your wedges and putt.
Wow. So those are the three things.
Yeah.
Drive, hit your drive on the property.
Hit your wedges. Control the distance of your wedges. Learn how to hit your wedges well and putt.
With a distance that That's you right. know.
And you have to play a little strategy.
Mm-hmm.
How you hit a 5-iron is of no consequence. There's people that are going to beat you missing the green every time with a 5-iron.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to miss the green. Stats have shown that if you give, heck, mostly a lot of tour players even. If you give a tour player a 5-iron to hit a green, mm-hmm. it might be 50% of the time. Maybe.
Amazing.
It's true.
So it's chipping and putting.
It's huge. That's the only reason I played college golf. I could chip and putt.
You know, you had told me that you were in college, that you were really good at chipping and putting.
And I don't know why. I don't know why. Nobody showed me how to do it. I just had a knack for hitting the shorter shots.
Right. Well, and focused attention. Yeah. You focused on it, but, obviously.
You know, back to Sandy. We got married in 81. Mm-hmm. We were at Pinehurst Country Club at the time. I'd gone there to work for her dad. Jack was in the Golf Digest schools. And so I went to work for him in the Golf Digest
at
schools.
At Pinehurst.
Yeah. So here I go from
That's one
Baton
of the
Rouge.
Top rated courses yeah. in the U.S.
Yeah. So I go from Baton Rouge, move to Hilton Head, South Carolina, which I'm like kid in a candy store. And I meet Sandy. And I meet her dad. Then her dad brings me to Pinehurst.
Wow.
And then introduces me to Bob Toski, Peter Costas, Davis Love, Jim Flick, Chuck Cook, Paul Runyon, Hank Haney came to Pinehurst at the same time.
Wow.
And this whole time I'm thinking, how did I get here? Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of that has to do with my upbringing. You know, my parents and all my relatives believed in hard work, take advantage of your opportunities, be nice, just be a nice person.
Please and thank you.
Yeah, appreciate what you have. And when I went to Hilton Head, I felt like I outworked everybody. And so a couple of opportunities came along. Because I know I look back now and look at, you know, some young people, I can pick out who, and you can too, who wants it. Who's yeah. going somewhere.
Yes.
Almost from the moment you lay eyes on them, within
they're,
5 seconds.
They're the
this
ones
person
who are internally motivated.
Yeah, this person's going somewhere.
You have to want it.
Yeah. So that's kind of how that worked. Went to Pinehurst, was there for 3 years. Hank Haney ended up marrying my sister. Did you know
really?
That?
No, I didn't. No.
Yeah. So Hank and I, you know, yeah. we did everything together.
Yeah.
And learning from him was incredible. He's really good. You know, a lot of people might not like the way he does things, but he's really good.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mike, what I've learned from you is that that's because there isn't one way to do it. So there's not one swing on your Facebook account. You're always posting different swings from the past and how they've changed and evolved. And then even, you know, why don't they teach this swing today?
Mm-hmm.
So comment a little bit about that, just the
Yeah, even this morning I was looking at Golf World magazine, and there's this new young player by the name of Matthew Wolf, who has that backswing that goes up and out and circles back around and comes down beautifully. And the cover said something like, "Is this player going to change the way we swing a golf club?" And no, it's not. It's a beautiful swing, but everybody's not going to be trying to copy that swing.
Right.
We've been trying to copy Hogan's swing for years. Nobody's copied it yet. We all have our own signature move that we make. And when I watch a Matthew Wolf, I have old videos that Sandy's grandfather took at the 1968 Masters with 16-millimeter reel.
Wow.
And I post these from time to time. And a lot of pros see them. Where'd you get these videos? like this. My grandfather took those at the Masters.
Uh-huh.
And Jack had it transferred to VHS tape. I had it transferred to DVD.
Uh-huh.
And then one day, I just took some pictures off my TV screen with my phone.
Really?
And that's some of the pictures that I post. Uh-huh. Are they great quality? No. Do they need to be great quality to get the picture? No.
No.
And there's a player, Gabe Brewer. A lot of people that have been around golf for a long time. Gabe Brewer is a fantastic player. He was at the Masters. I'm even trying to remember. I think he won the Masters. I can't pull it up. But he's got the same exact move as Matthew Wolff.
Really?
Now, his swing back then in 1968 didn't change the way we swing a golf club.
Uh-huh.
Is it something to study and learn from? Yes. Are you going to do it? Probably not.
Mm-hmm.
You see? So, yet, yes, it is good to learn every method you can so that you can make your own model, if you will, of what you think is important
mm-hmm.
in a golf swing. So a young instructor, yes, it's important to go learn that method.
Mm-hmm.
Go learn it. It's a good place to get started. But then after you learn that, go learn this one. What makes this one work? What makes this one work?
Oh, okay.
And you...
You know, you're always on Facebook. You're always posting different swings. And then you're asking your world to comment on them.
Yeah.
And there's always a lot of comments about this is wrong or this is right. Or it really ignites a firestorm of just of controversy over the perfect swing and how it's supposed to be done.
Right, and I have to confess, sometimes I bait, you mm-hmm. know, people on some of my posts, just to prove that, or point out, or make people aware that there's not one way to do this. And you can't just look at somebody's swing and say this is not right. And there's some fundamentals that some people live by that shouldn't be fundamentals. It's like the takeaway. There's some people that are so strict about how you should take the club back.
Mm-hmm.
Yet, I can show you all these people in the Hall of Fame that take it back all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
It's no different than watching baseball. Watch a baseball hitter set up to hit a baseball.
Mm-hmm.
They could have the bat wiggling around way up in front of them, back behind them, all over the place. But when it comes time to swing, the bat planes itself out, and they all swing more similar. The same can be said for golf. You could take it back a little outside. You could take it back inside. You could take it back straight. You take it back low to the ground. You could pick it up a little bit. Mm-hmm. The ball doesn't know. The ball only knows what the club is doing from... call it 3 feet from the ball to 3 feet through the ball, which by that time the club is traveling so fast, you're not going to change it. Mm-hmm. It is what it is. So how you load the club into position to swing through that spot is important. But you can change that from the backswing. That's right. So by the time you make your transition from the top to start coming down, that's when you see, ooh, this is going to be good. So you could be watching somebody swing and watch them take the club back and go, oh, no. But then get up to the top and go, oh, yes.
Oh.
On the other hand, you see a lot of players that have tried to do it so perfect. They've got the lines on the ground. They've got the perfect posture. They got the perfect grip, ball position, the model takeaway for some, mm-hmm. not mine.
Mm-hmm.
The model top of the swing, and they can't play. They have a beautiful swing, but the score doesn't reflect the swing. And they're getting passed up by people that have funky-looking moves,
mm-hmm.
but know how to play. So everybody's different, you know? If you said, hey, you could play good either way. Would you rather have a good-looking swing or a not-so-good? I'll take the good-looking swing, no doubt about it. But a good-looking swing doesn't guarantee you good scores. That's all I'm trying to say.
All right, so if I were a golf instructor, a young golf instructor just starting out right now, what are the three pieces of advice that you'd give me?
Find a mentor. Find a mentor that you can watch, teach with, ask questions, take to lunch. Find a mentor. Too often we
just set out on the journey and think that you can read books and
exactly
watch video, and then
that is such a slow way to learn. Mm-hmm. You'd rather be able.
So in your career, is that
that's how I
one of the reason that I mean really is that what happened to you? You just lucked into this unbelievable mentoring world. Is that?
I guess. I mean, I didn't plan it.
Right.
I didn't plan it.
Because you didn't have a book with your list. I'm going to go find a mentor.
No, I didn't. And you didn't. So the first one was Jack Lumpkin. And I had no idea until I saw him teach. And I'm right there watching this whole deal. Mm-hmm. And then I went and watched again. And then he said, would you like to help us in the Golf Digest schools? Which I was a gopher. I was gladly a gopher. Mm-hmm. Yes. How can I get involved? I used to stand there and tee up balls for Bob Toski while he's teaching a student.
Wow.
He wanted them teed up. I'll be glad to tee them up for you.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so that's how it started. Then Hank Haney, same thing. Hank Haney came to Pinehurst in 1981 at the same time I was coming. I was coming to be there with Jack. Hank was coming from the John Jacobs schools, and he was going to run the Pinehurst Golf Advantage schools. So when I went to work there, my job was to assist Jack, because Jack was going to be out of town for half the year, and he wanted me there to teach the members, the locals that were his clients when he was out of town.
Oh.
It was my job to, I want you to coach him on what I'm working on with him. And we want you to help in the Pinehurst Golf Advantage schools with Hank, too. So I'm in. Mm-hmm. But Hank brought a different model of teaching to Pinehurst than what I was familiar with in Golf Digest, mm-hmm. which was great.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. So Hank find a mentor.
Yeah.
And you just lucked into this.
Here, I got two of them now.
Target rich.
Yeah. And Hank and I, it was classic because we started doing clinics at the Pinehurst Hotel at night for people coming out of dinner. Mm-hmm. And Hank was a master at it. And I learned just through going with him, we would do a 10-minute little opening clinic of how we teach golf. Mm-hmm. Which is based on the ball flight and then how the club is creating that ball flight. And then ultimately, what are you doing to that club to make it fly like that?
Okay.
It's a beautiful
system. That's pretty simple.
Of teaching golf, exactly. And that's how it's still done today.
Pretty simple.
Yeah. So I learned a lot from Hank. Then in 1982, Hank had learned from a fellow named Jim Hardy, who is also one of the best in the world. And Hank had known Jim from a young boy. And Jim said, hey, I'm out in Palm Springs. You should come out, and I've got some new stuff I'm working on. So, and Hank says, hey, you want to go? I said, sure. So we drive out to Palm Springs in a DeLorean.
Oh, no.
Hank had a DeLorean.
Wow.
And Hank slept most of the way. I drove the DeLorean.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, we get out to Palm Springs, and Jim taught from 7 to 3 every day. Booked.
Wow.
Months in advance. every hour on the hour. So the first day I show up there at 7 o'clock with a cup of coffee and watch Jim diagnose and correct and start coaching a student. Mm-hmm. Once I got an idea of what he was trying to do, I would leave and go hit a few balls. I'd come back at 8 and watch the diagnosis, correction, and coaching.
Oh.
And once he got into his coaching, and I could see where it was going, I'd go hit a few more balls.
Uh-huh.
Same thing, every hour.
Wow.
And after 2 days, I remember I had a terrible swing.
Yeah. Now, Jim Hardy is famous for the one plane swing.
But not at this time.
Oh, okay.
He was not doing that in 1982.
All right.
If he did, it wasn't defined.
Okay.
And every lesson he gave back in 1982 was different.
Hmm.
That's what I loved about it, is that I'd go show up back at 9 and hear something what I thought might be similar to the guy he had at 7.
Uh-huh.
And it's different.
Yeah, you would think he would just do the same thing and just repeat it. Just
it wasn't anything like that.
Wow.
So after a couple days, he's watching me hit balls, you know, during his coaching sessions. And he comes over and he says, "Would you like some help?" I said, "Yes, sir, I would." And he proceeded to describe my whole golfing history. Well, you probably did this at one time, this at one time. You probably suffered from these shots, this shot.
This even knowing anything about you, he described...
I'm standing 100 yards away.
He described your history.
He described my history right there. I'm thinking, how did he do that? And he says, "Here's what I need you to do." And at that point, I was willing to do anything to get better.
Uh-huh.
Tell me to stand on my head, I'll stand on my head. And not complain.
Because you had physical... problems.
Yeah. And
with your
so in 15 minutes, no, in 5 minutes, he's diagnosed my problem and what I need to do about it. And I had not heard that from anybody before.
Wow.
And as soon as I heard it, it made sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
So this is why I couldn't do this, this, and this. I haven't changed. Nobody's found the root cause of the problem. He's just put his finger on the root cause of the problem. And Hank is there. I don't think Hank was there that first day. I had another 15-minute session or so with Jim later, and Hank is watching. And that's all it took. Might have been 2 15-minute sessions. Wow. And then Hank and I went back to Piner's, and Hank was my pair of eyes. But I knew what I was watching too.
Uh-huh.
And so I started working on this swing change. Every day, 10 minutes a day, 15 minutes here, 15 minutes there. We were teaching golf schools all day. So at lunchtime, I would tell a couple of the assistants, "Order me this, this, and this. I'll be there in a second." And I'd run inside, I'd get on video, and I would try to do this move that I knew I needed to make.
Uh-huh.
And every time I would look at it, I would go, "I'm not even doing it. I need to do it more." But that's how you learn.
Mm-hmm.
And... long story short, we go back to Piner's. 3 months later, I'm in the last group or second to last group every tournament I'm playing in.
Really?
And my friends are like, "What happened to your swing?"
Wow.
I had a good swing.
Mm-hmm.
But it took 3 months of me, because I had a mess. 3 months of training it, just trying to improve it, put it in a little better place. Or a lot better place.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, I'm playing great golf. I ended up playing in a tour event at Pinehurst. A tour event.
A tour event.
Then we moved to Arizona in 1984, and I'm immediately in contention in the Arizona section. I qualify for the Phoenix Open. Then in 1989, I'm Player of the Year in the Southwest section, which is all of Arizona and Las Vegas. I play in the Phoenix Open again. I play in the Tucson Open. The next year, I almost won the section championship again. I get invited to play in the Tucson Open. I miss cut by shot. I was on a roll.
Epic.
thinking this is never going to end. And it lasted for 9 years.
Wow.
Then I started losing it a little bit, or I lost it a lot. But that 9 year stretch, it just goes to show you, if you're doing the right thing, it's not going to last for 9 holes or a week.
Uh huh.
This change lasted for 9 years of great golf, better than I've ever dreamed of playing. And that's what actually got, you know, when you asked earlier about top 100 teachers, that's what got me in the top 100,
mm-hmm.
was my playing ability. My playing ability. And the fact that I was with Golf Digest,
mm-hmm.
teaching in schools, learning from Toski, Lumpkin, Flick, Costas, all these great teachers.
But the playing took a lot of time and a lot of effort.
Sure.
This didn't come quick or easy in your life, did it?
And the playing drew my playing ability and the way I was swinging a golf club drew the attention of some other good players.
Mm-hmm.
So my first student was of any notoriety was Keith Clearwater, who was an 87 Rookie of the Year.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And that just brought in another player and another player, another player.
Mm-hmm.
You know, recognizing, I don't know what's going on here, but this is good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then I get to teach every year with Chuck Cook, who's another National Teacher of the Year.
Mm-hmm.
So still, to this day, there's so much to learn. More about the learning process than anything.
But you've lived the journey, though.
Yeah.
You've lived it.
Yeah.
You started out as a 15-year-old caddying for your dad, not knowing anything about it. And you ended up having a 9-year stretch where you're playing golf at a level that you never really even imagined.
Right. Or a 40-year teaching career that's been a fairy tale. Pinch myself every day that I get to do what I do. And I get to go home every night, and my wife is incredible as an instructor. We get to share, what were you doing with Mrs. Jones today? That was interesting. And she'll share something that I learned from, and vice versa. And then Lindy will come over for dinner, and the three of us are talking golf instruction. Who has that?
I talked to Lindy recently, and I asked, so what's it like having dinner at the LeBove table? And she said, well, it's about like you'd expect. How's your grip? How's your swing? How's your chipping? Show me.
Yeah.
At the LeBove house, you get to swing the club inside the house.
Oh, yeah.
You're not chased out. That would be one difference.
And you have to watch. If you're going to do that, you have to watch who's around, right? So, you know, I have a great dog. I know my dog's in front of me, mm-hmm. where I can see her if I'm going to demonstrate a swing in the house. But that's important. We have to remind people of that all the time.
You swing in the house.
Oh, yeah. Matter of fact, when I was when I went through that 9-year stretch, when I was changing those 3 months, when I was really working on my swing, I was making 75 to 100 swings at night in the house.
Really?
Yeah. And when I did get awarded Player of the Year in Arizona in 89, this fellow that wrote for the Phoenix paper, he comes out one day, he goes, they tell me you don't practice. How'd you get this done? And I said, oh, I practice. They just don't see me practicing.
Uh-huh.
He said, what are you talking about? I said, well, I make 75 to 100 swings a night, like I know I need to do, just trying to groove my move. 75 to 100 a night. He said, really? I said, yeah. And it's very powerful. Most people today, they will tell you that, I know what I'm doing wrong, I just can't change it.
Mm-hmm.
Or I make a good practice swing, I just can't do it on a golf shelf. Let me see that practice swing. I'll show you what's wrong with it. I rarely see somebody that makes a practice swing that's actually going to help them.
Really?
Rarely. And most of the time, I video. When they come up for the lesson the first time, I video, I make a practice swing for me. They make a practice swing, then they hit a ball. So make another practice swing. Mm-hmm. I film it. Here's your practice swing. Let me show you. You are practicing your exact mistake. And you're doing a good job.
Wow. That's fascinating.
Isn't it? So,
yeah.
And we used to say that in a golf school all the time, too. We'd have a three-day golf school, and Hank and I would look at each other and say, because the students had goals. Oh, I'm a 15 handicap. I want to be a 9. I want to be this. I want to be that. Mm-hmm. Great. And Hank and I would look at each other and go, do you think by the end of 3 days we could get this person to practice better, to make a better practice swing?
Wow.
So that,
that's powerful.
Yeah. So that
and when, simple.
Yeah. So simple. Now I can see if somebody has a mistake in their swing and then they make a practice swing, that tells me that, okay, there's somebody that understands the mistake and they're practicing, they're making a practice swing that would encourage a better move. Mm-hmm. You see it on tour a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Where somebody's making an exaggerated move and you can tell there's some intent to the practice swing, and you're going, what is he doing? Or what is she doing? It's an odd looking move. And then they step up to the ball and hit, off it goes. Beautiful swing.
Mm-hmm.
Most amateurs don't know what that is for them.
Okay.
How can I make a better practice swing to encourage myself doing a better move? So in a pre-shot routine, which should take about 40 seconds to play a golf shot. That's it. 40 mm-hmm. seconds, including a practice swing. So you drive up, you've got your yardage, your wind, elevation, where's the trouble? Ultimately, where do you want to hit it? I want to go 145 towards that tree. Now that might be away from the pin,
mm-hmm.
but that's where I want to go in that distance. That should take you, whatever, 15 seconds to make that decision and commitment to that. I'm going 145 at that tree. As soon as you put your hand on a club, it should take you 20 seconds with a practice swing.
Wow.
Mine takes 21 seconds. I have people time me all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell them, you start the clock as soon as I touch a club and watch, count the seconds by the time I touch the club and then hit a ball. It's no different than watching a basketball player shoot a free throw.
Mm-hmm.
They get the ball, spin it twice, bounce it three times, shoot the shot.
Yeah.
And it's the same in preseason or the finals.
Uh-huh.
Golf should be the same. Same routine every time.
And then start with your practice shot.
But your practice swing, hopefully, is encouraging a better move for you. It's like when you came and we did that deal together
mm-hmm.
that was written up in New York Times. How cool is that? And that all started with I was set out to prove that you could increase your speed and hit the ball farther if you wanted to. Because mm-hmm. I was hearing, you know, too many people say, no, his swing speed is what it is. It's not going to change.
Right. Yes.
Fitting for clubs. Yes. That's just, he's not going to change. Fitting for clubs. And I was like, wait a minute. Does he want to change? Well, they say they do, but they're not going to change. So, if you remember, how long ago was that we did that?
It was 20 years.
That's hard to believe.
It is.
So, I got Steve Heller at the Westin to come do this with me. We're going to take 12 people, and we're going to prove that if they want to change, we'll change them. They're going to hit it farther, better. And the average improvement in 6 weeks was 9 miles an hour in that group of 12.
Mm-hmm.
We had guys, women, a junior.
Yeah, all ages, all types.
Yeah.
It was... So, for a little bit of background for the listener, so you came up with the question of whether an average golfer could walk in off the street and after 6 weeks improve through lessons and fitness. And so I was part of that test study group. And first we were tested at a golf testing facility. So you had...
Independent testers.
Independent testers. So you had a before status, the before criteria of swing speed and ball distance. And then you tested us after it, but it was only 6 weeks.
With their same driver.
With the same...
No change in equipment.
Yeah, no change in equipment. And we had to take fitness, an hour and a half of fitness at 6 a.m.
Twice a week.
Yeah, actually, it was three times a week for me.
At the program, you did it. You were doing the fitness anyway.
Okay, that's true. Yes.
But in the program, we wanted at least 2 days of fitness.
And then 2 days of lessons.
And then I only saw them once a week for 6 weeks.
Okay.
In a group of three or four for like an hour and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't a lot.
Yes. No, it was simple.
Yeah.
And then...
But I put your swing on video.
Was dramatic.
Yeah, I put your swing on video, first thing. I still have those videos.
Yeah.
Of the before and after.
But the outcome was dramatic.
Yeah. Well, you gained 20 miles an hour.
And that's documented.
It's documented. And the fitters at this independent tester could not believe. They were like, what did you do? Wasn't that hard. And even to this day, there's outfit setter. You can increase somebody's speed. If they want to hit the ball farther, that's easy.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm involved with some people right now that are doing a great job at that.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but I did. I increased my club head speed 20 miles an hour in 6 weeks.
Yeah,
with almost minimal lessons from me. I mean, not 20 mile an hour worth of lessons.
If you remember, the best player in the group only gained like 2 miles an hour, but his ball speed went up 30 miles an hour.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Because he was making better contact.
Okay. And that makes sense.
More efficient hit.
Right.
What today they call the smash factor.
Okay.
Which is basically how you solid
compress,
you're hitting
you compress
the ball.
The ball. Fascinating. Well, then, Mike, we ended up on being featured in the New York Times with your picture and mine. Then after that, I get a call one day, middle of the day, hey, Fred, come out to the course. And I'm like, Mike, I've got a day job. I have to work. And you're like, oh, just come out. Come out and see me. And then we videotaped an infomercial that was on the Golf Channel. And in my world, in my line of work, I became really famous because apparently I've worked with a lot of insomniacs. Fred, I was up at 2 a.m. I saw you on the Golf Channel.
That's right. Well, the infomercial wanted you. With 20 miles an hour increase?
Yes. Well, that's
true. Because the infomercial was for that tool called the speed stick.
Okay.
There's a new speed stick out now. But back then, 20 years ago, the speed stick had a gauge at the end of the stick.
Okay.
That would register your swing speed.
All right.
And they had brought that item out the week before I was starting that 6-week program.
Oh.
And I don't use a lot of swing aids. But
yeah, you don't.
But this one, I said, yeah, bring it out. I'm getting ready to start a test next week. I'll let you know if it works or not.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
So we documented that.
So I thought I just showed up, but there was a lot behind it.
Yeah. And, but you were the star. They wanted you.
That's amazing.
20 miles an hour.
And it was documented. This was not made up.
No.
And in only 6 weeks.
Yeah.
So it can be done.
It can be done.
All right. So Mike, getting back to the, just in close a little bit here, I'd like to close with your advice. So for the young instructor, I ask you the three things, and first it's get a mentor. You ended up with epic mentors beyond imagination, all right? And what's number two and number three for a young golf instructor? What else do they need to do?
You know, it's interesting. I started to say, get three mentors. But as I think more about it, I don't think we are trained enough as an organization in customer service, mm-hmm. how to treat people. We're in the service industry. So just having a smile on your face and being inviting mm-hmm. is huge. So if I had to go back to college, I would take more classes in how to speak, mm-hmm. you know, speaking classes. But my family trained us how to wear a smile and how mm-hmm. to say hello and please and thank you and good manners. Mm-hmm. I think as a golf instructor, you could certainly acquire information about swing planes and postures and how to pivot and mm-hmm. all the technical stuff that you need to know. Some of that stuff, you know, a lot of that stuff, the more the better. But if you take two instructors and one has an incredible knowledge base and the other one has a little bit of knowledge, but they're nice to be with, mm-hmm. fun to be around, they're going to get all the business.
Wow. That's profound.
Now, somebody that is really good might end up being with the instructor that has more knowledge, mm-hmm. but the masses are going to be with that person that is fun to be with. Sandy is fun to be with. Mm-hmm. As I watch, I'm amazed at how many students come out there and they're just talking the whole time. They mm-hmm. hardly hit a ball. Mm-hmm. She had one lesson one time. They never hit a ball. It had my attention. Mm-hmm. I was like, holy cow, they haven't hit a ball yet. And we're 50 minutes into the lesson. And so then I was really watching. Uh-huh. I had my ears open, you know, as I'm teaching my lesson. And sure enough, they never hit a ball. And when the lesson was over, the guy picked up his bag and said, Sandy, that was great. When can I come back? They never hit a ball.
Wow.
But he enjoys her company so much. And they were talking about golf strategy and philosophy and stuff like that. It's not always about how to swing. Mm-hmm. So,
or being a technician.
Exactly. And certainly you want to get as good at that as you can to be able to identify problems like that. But uh-huh. But that's the two biggest things I can think of right now. As I think about it more, I might come up with number three.
All right, so now I want to end this session, end this podcast. So you're sitting here today, and you've had this incredible career, except you haven't stopped. This year, you climbed a 13,000-foot mountain. You have had numerous great hikes with your dog and without your dog. You have just played the number one course in the world with a golf trip with your friends, a friend golf trip. Tell me a little bit about that. So tell me about your life and how it's ended up and what 2019 has been like for Mike LeBeauf.
Hmm. You know, I'm so blessed to be around the people I get to hang with every day. And it's been that way the whole ride. But the club that we're affiliated with up in Colorado, the Roaring Fork Club, is an incredible, I've never seen anything like it from a country club standpoint. Mm-hmm. And what sets it apart is the people, the members, the people. And so not only do I get to work there, if you can call it work, what I do.
Yeah, you're up there half of the time. That's not work to me. But
no, I don't really have a job. I enjoy what I do, but we've also made some incredible friends. And Sandy and I both like just doing things. We don't sit around. And so exploring the world is fun. Mm-hmm. Learning about anything we can learn about. So we've been up there now for 6 years, and there's this mountain, Mount Sopris, in the valley. And for 6 years, I've been looking at this mountain.
It's a big mountain.
Yeah, it's 13,000 feet. And the valley's at 6,500 feet. And every year, I would look at that thing and go, I got to do that one day. And finally, I got tired of looking at it. So I got a couple of my hiking buddies, and we went and tackled it this summer. I didn't take Casey because it's technical at the top, and she's getting up there in age a little bit, so I didn't want that to...
Casey's your dog.
Yeah.
Your loyal...
Yeah, 12-year-old.
Beautiful.
Lab that I wish I could clone. So, yeah, 13,000-foot mountain this summer, but we hike every Monday up there for the most part. And then at the end of the summer, the club... We've got a head pro up there by the name of Greg Bryan, who's terrific. And he does two or three trips every year for the members after the season's over.
Oh.
And takes members to Australia, New Zealand, Europe, all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Great, great trips. And we were fortunate enough to be invited to go to this Ireland trip where we played Royal County Down, which I don't know if it's still ranked number one in the world, but at the time it was ranked number one in the world. And it is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
It was, it's a bucket list item.
Yeah, the pictures, it wasn't green, it was verdant.
Verdant, I like
it. It was
that.
A verdant.
Yeah, it's a beautiful spot. And a few of us said, we'd like to come back here and just spend 3 days or 4 days and just play this over and over.
Uh-huh.
Because it takes a few times to really learn a golf course and really appreciate all of it.
Now, there were no trees.
Not really to speak of. I mean, they're trees or bushes. You know, that gorse or whatever whatever they call it is nasty. You don't want to be in it, but it's pretty.
Incredible. Well, Mike, thanks for the conversation. This has been so much fun. It's such a joy. And I think the conclusion, the final conclusion, what you've really described is maybe the secret to life is friendship. Make friends, keep friends, be with friends, play with friends. And then maybe your final advice and have a great dog.
Yeah.
Is that... Mike,
you can't
LeBeau.
Go wrong with a good, with a good dog.
All right, Mike. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Fred.